Gościem programu Allegro ma non troppo będzie dzisiaj pierwszy wiceprzewodniczący wykonawczy Komisji Europejskiej, jeden z najbardziej cenionych i szanowanych ludzi w Europie, Frans Timmermans, człowiek, którego magazyn Time umieścił wśród 100 najbardziej wpływowych ludzi na świecie, a prestiżowy portal Politico umieścił w czołówce najbardziej wpływowych ludzi w Europie. Pan Timmermans urodził się w Bredzie w Holandii i był przyjacielem Polski na długo przed wstąpieniem do świata polityki. Trzeba bowiem pamiętać, że Breda została wyzwolona przez polskich żołnierzy generała Maczka i żołnierzy pierwszej samodzielnej brygady spadochronowej generała Stanisława Sosabowskiego. Gdy mój tata miał 6 lat, opowiada Frans Timmermans, w 1944 roku, polscy żołnierze zatrzymali się w moim rodzinnym domu w Bredzie. Jeden z nich był z zawodu krawcem i uszył mojemu ojcu malutki mundurek i tata stał się maskotką oddziału. Ci żołnierze byli niezwykle przyjaźni i zżyci z moją rodziną. Obiecywali, że po wojnie wrócą, ale żaden nie wrócił. Wielu z nich poległo za wolną Holandię i wolną Polskę, mówił Timmermans. Nie dziw więc, że od młodości włączył się w kultywowanie pamięci o generale Maczku w Bredzie, który zresztą spoczywa w tym mieście na cmentarzu, przyczynił się do powstania Muzeum generała Maczka, sprawił, że rząd holenderski odznaczył pośmiertnie żołnierzy pierwszej samodzielnej brygady spadochronowej generała Stanisława Sosabowskiego. Wolność Holandii przyszła także dzięki polskim żołnierzom, mówił przy innej okazji Frans Timmermans. Większość z nich nigdy nie zobaczyła wolnej Polski. To, że Polska jest dzisiaj w Unii Europejskiej, to nagroda, na którą zasłużyli tamci ludzie. Polska jest i zawsze będzie wiodącym krajem w Europie. Nikt nie jest w stanie temu przeszkodzić. Chyba że uczynią to sami Polacy, mówił przy innej okazji Frans Timmermans. Prawie 100% Polaków chce, by ich kraj odgrywał wiodącą rolę, ale Polska może tę rolę utracić, jeśli polski rząd nie będzie się stosował do zasad zapisanych w traktacie europejskim, zwłaszcza do artykułu 2, mówiącego o równości wobec prawa, o polityce antydyskryminacyjnej i o praworządności. Nasz dzisiejszy rozmówca jest gorącym zwolennikiem integracji europejskiej. Wszelkie mechanizmy wspólnego europejskiego rynku to jedynie narzędzie, mówił, zaś właściwym celem są coraz silniejsze związki ludzi pracujących wspólnie nad takim porządkiem ekonomicznym i społecznym, w którym prawa każdego, niezależnie od płci czy orientacji seksualnej, będą respektowane. O to walczyli podczas wojny także polscy żołnierze, którzy wyzwalali ogromne połacie Europy, a my musimy tych zdobyczy bronić. Frans Timmermans, warto o tym wiedzieć, przez 3 lata pracował jako drugi sekretarz ambasady holenderskiej w Moskwie. Poznał doskonale kraj, jego politykę i język, co sprawiło, że został zaangażowany przez holenderski wywiad jako oficer przesłuchujący rosyjskich agentów. Wielkich złudzeń co do Rosji nie ma. Niewzruszenie stoi u boku Ukrainy od czasu pomarańczowej rewolucji, a zwłaszcza teraz po rosyjskiej agresji. Dodajmy, że jako osoba odpowiedzialna za realizację wszelkich najważniejszych wielkich projektów unijnych jest upiornie zajęty. Stąd nasza rozmowa będzie krótsza od innych rozmów w cyklu Allegro ma non troppo. Zapraszamy. Dzień dobry, ja jestem Jacek Pałaśniński, a to jest program Allegro ma non troppo na portalu natemat.pl. Dzisiaj naszym gościem jest pierwszy wiceprzewodniczący wykonawczy Komisji Europejskiej, pan Frans Timmermans. Sir, dziękuję, że jest pan z nami. Mamy niewiele czasu, a ja mam do pana 12 pytań, dlatego mamy mniej więcej minutę na każdą odpowiedź. Trwa wojna na Ukrainie. Unia Europejska już przeznaczyła na pomoc temu krajowi bardzo dużo środków, lecz zdaniem władz w Kijowie to wciąż za mało. Co pańskim zdaniem Unia może jeszcze zrobić, by pomóc Ukrainie w przetrwaniu i w zwycięstwie w tej wojnie?
Well, I think first of all we have to show full solidarity with the citizens of Ukraine, with the government of Ukraine, by giving them the economic assistance they need. We need to convince the member states and the council that they should allocate more funds for Ukraine. But at the same time, we have to take steps to integrate Ukraine in many of our policies where Ukraine can profit, but also can be a very good contributor, such as the agricultural policy, our energy transition policy. Ukraine could be a huge contributor to clean hydrogen in the future, to biomethane in the future. And so we need to integrate our, the Ukrainian economy into the European economy. I honestly believe that is the best way we can help Ukraine stand on its own two legs and be a very, very successful economy.
Sir, in your opinion, is there any red line? Czy jest jakaś czerwona linia, po której kraje Unii Europejskiej włączą się bezpośrednio do walki po stronie Ukrainy, of the Ukraine?
I don't think there is any member state of the EU who considers joining in a military action in Ukraine. But at the same time, there is strong solidarity in terms of training Ukrainian soldiers, in terms of providing Ukraine with military equipment and sophisticated military equipment, providing Ukraine with ammunitions. And I believe that is the best contribution we can make. Getting ourselves directly involved in this war would potentially lead to an escalation that doesn't profit anyone.
Yes, sure, but if they use... Ale gdyby użyli bomby atomowej czy broni biologicznej, to czy wtedy kraje Unii Europejskiej nie zareagowałyby?
European Union for Western countries in its whole?
Well, of course, there's always potential of an escalation. And it is very important that we send a clear message to Putin that we are ready for escalation dominance. He cannot escalate his way into a victory. And I think this is a strong message that has to come from NATO, has to come from the EU, and it is coming from NATO, it is coming from the EU. And our transatlantic bond today is very, very strong. And that is a signal Putin cannot ignore.
But will the Commission, will the European, czy Komisja, czy Unia Europejska cała zadowolą się jakimś zawieszeniem broni, czy będą dążyły do pokonania Rosji, tak aby już więcej nie zagrażała swoim sąsiadom, nie zagrażała Europie i światu?
Europe and the entire world?
Well, I don't see any scenario in which Putin can come out as a winner of this war. I see a scenario where he returns to his own country. And then I think there will be, I lived and worked in Russia for quite some time. I think we will see a very, very long period of Russian soul searching. What is their role in the world? That could end well, that could end also very badly. The only thing we should be doing on the European side is to make sure we are that strong and that united that Putin is not tempted to try again or to try and do other things. It is of extreme importance that we show him clearly that there's no point in trying another aggression. If we show weakness, he will never stop. But he's also not an eternal figure. There will be changes in Russia. There will be also some reckoning in Russia. I mean, behind all the bluster you see now, there's also deep, deep concerns in Russia and in the Russian system of what this is doing to them. And it's not very clear very often, but the sanctions are hurting Russia. There is a lot of discontent in Russia, even if it doesn't reach the media.
Changing the subject. Dziś Komisja Europejska zaprezentowała dokument na temat oszczędności gazu. Wynika zeń, że nawet po podpisaniu nowych porozumień o dostawach z Norwegią, Katarem, Izraelem itp. Unii zabraknie 20 miliardów metrów sześciennych gazu. I czy obniżenie temperatury w domach do 19 stopni sprawi, że gazu wystarczy dla wszystkich na normalne życie?
For everyone in Europe to live a normal life?
Well, you know, we have presented a whole range of proposals. We propose to member states to reduce their gas consumption with 15% as compared to the average gas consumption over the last 5 years. That is quite an effort, but it's entirely feasible. In the country I come from, in the Netherlands, citizens and companies did that spontaneously, and the Netherlands reduced its gas consumption with 20%, and that is a gas-producing country. So it is also a matter of whether you want, and of course, the Dutch did not just do this to punish Putin. It was also because gas prices are now so high that consuming less really makes a difference in your income. And so we have very many reasons why, with a number of measures, we should reduce our gas consumption. And we need also to speed up our transition to renewable energy, because the only energy we are masters of in the future will be renewable energy, and it's also the cheapest energy. So that's the only way forward for our citizens. But in the short run, we will have to do more to save gas. Why? Because if we don't, and there are serious shortages because Putin doesn't deliver any gas or because we have a very harsh winter, then we risk creating a recession in our economy if certain industries would not have access to gas, and certain countries might be cut off, and certain countries will be in difficulty if they are cut off completely, more than other countries. So this is a time of European solidarity, and reducing our gas consumption by 15% is an act of solidarity by everyone, even those who do not depend on Russian gas.
I witnessed the agreement you signed with the Norwegian minister. Do you have any other agreement on that kind with any other country in the short term?
Well, President von der Leyen signed an agreement with Commissioner Simpson with Azerbaijan in the last couple of days. We are also in close touch with Qatar, with Algeria. We have a deal on LNG with the United States. We are talking to Australia. We're talking to more and more countries to make this happen. But many countries are already producing the maximum of what they can produce. And like Azerbaijan has indicated, they will double their production. But doubling the production takes a couple of years. So we will be in a much better situation 2-3 years down the line. But for now, we cannot get the quantities we need. So we also need to save gas. And also try and make sure. And we are now, the one thing that's going quite well is we're filling our gas reserves at a higher rate than last year. So I think that is going quite well.
Okay, but there's another side of this question. The gas shortage has left many... Niedobór gazu sprawił, że wiele rządów rozpaczliwie poszukuje węgla, co oznacza zwiększenie emisji gazów cieplarnianych. Kwitnie czarny rynek, trwa gorączkowy import, ceny węgla stały się absurdalnie wysokie. Czy komisja będzie patrzeć pobłażliwiej na użycie węgla? I jak to się ma do Fit for 55?
Well, what we in our Repower EU plan that we presented, we do understand that in the short run, using more coal might be necessary. But if we can speed up our transition to renewables, which are going to be much cheaper than coal, then the target we have on our climate policy will not change, will remain the same. And if I look in the case of Poland, I don't think there's any other country in Europe where citizens are buying solar panels so massively. I mean, I was in Poland recently. Almost every roof has solar panels now, and people are scrambling to get them, and heat pumps, etc. So Polish citizens understand full well that their energy needs can be met in a very cheap way, also through renewable energy.
Sure, but you're surely aware that Polish government make it harder for consumers to put solar panels on their roof. It is not so convenient as it used to be before.
Well, it would be nice if governments would listen to their population a bit more.
Absolutely, yes. For any government, especially for Polish. And being on Poland, in an interview to the Guardian, w wywiadzie dla Guardiana z 3 lipca wyznał pan, że głosował pan wraz z wiceprzewodniczącą Margaret Vestager przeciwko uwolnieniu dla Polski środków z COVID recovery plan. Może pan pokrótce powiedzieć dlaczego? Can you briefly say why?
Well, the reason is quite simple. I believe we as Commission, we have a duty also to protect the interest of the European Court of Justice. That is part of how we take our role seriously as guardians of the treaty. The European Court of Justice has ruled very clearly, for instance, on the reinstallation of judges who have been suspended. The court didn't say you have to have a procedure so that the judges can apply. No, the court said putting them out of their function was illegal. So if the Court of Justice says that is illegal, there's only one way to redress that, and that is to say it never happened. And the judges should be immediately reinstated in the functions they had. Now, this is not what is part of the discussion. So in my view, that is one element where I believe the milestones are not in conformity with the rulings of the European Court of Justice. Also, the position that judges can take other judges to court, which is, I think, also part of the rule of law, is not envisaged in what the Polish government has done so far. So, first of all, I believe the milestones should have been clearer in terms of adopting the rulings of the European Court of Justice. But even if you depart from the milestones, if you take the milestones as your benchmark, the it is my belief that what has been done is not in line with these benchmarks either.
You're a proven long. Jest pan sprawdzonym wieloletnim przyjacielem Polski. Za swoje zasługi został pan dwukrotnie odznaczony polskimi orderami przez prezydentów Lecha Kaczyńskiego i Bronisława Komorowskiego. Skąd u pana taka sympatia do Polski?
Well, you know, frankly, the reason is very simple. My father would probably not have survived the war had he not been liberated by the brave soldiers of General Maciek in Breda in the fall of 1944. And since then, my family has felt a very, very deep gratitude towards the Polish people for having liberated the Netherlands. Also because the tragic history of those soldiers, who were very often punished by the communists after the war, or sometimes couldn't even return to their country. The tragic fate of General Sosabowski, who also fought in my country to relieve the British troops that were caught in Operation Market Garden. And he was a true hero, and his soldiers were true heroes. And this general ended his life as a night porter in a British factory. And these are the things that drive me to be, because Poland has been a victim of history so, so long, for so many times. And now Poland is an independent country with borders that are disputed by no one, a proud member of NATO, a proud member of the EU, a proud European nation. And that makes me really happy. But my debt of gratitude towards the Polish people stays and will always remain.
So what do you feel? W takim razie, co pan teraz czuje, kiedy rządząca w Polsce partia uznała pana swoim wrogiem numer dwa, zaraz po Donaldzie Tusku, Donald Tusk?
Well, I believe that the fact that I stand for the rule of law and that I'm willing to stick my neck out for that, and that I sometimes also pay a high political price. As you know, the Polish government strongly opposed my election as president of the commission. It is. I stand by my principles, and I do this. One of my Polish friends said, "Your problem is you love Poland too much." It might be the case, but I feel this debt of gratitude, and I feel every European citizen, including every Polish citizen, should have access to an independent judge. Judgments in Europe should not be made on the basis of a phone call to Party Central. Poland has had that for many, many decades. We should never return to that situation.
Absolutely, but procedury dyscyplinarne przeciwko polskiemu rządowi ciągną się latami i nie robią wrażenia na obecnych rządzących. Nawet sankcje finansowe za Turów i łamanie praworządności nie zmieniają ich postawy. Czy komisja ma jeszcze jakieś narzędzia, by zmusić rządzącą krajnie prawicową partię polską do powrotu na ścieżkę demokracji i przestrzegania międzynarodowych traktatów and respect of international treaties and laws?
Well, you know, in the end of the day, the only ones who can really do that are the Polish people. They are the only ones who can do that. We can encourage, we can sanction where we have the instruments, we can try and convince member states to take action, but at the end of the day, the only ones who are the sovereigns to decide this are the Polish citizens. And I hope the Polish citizens will decide wisely at the next election. They should understand we can help, but this will not be solved through Brussels. This will not be solved definitely through international action. This will be solved definitely one way or the other by the Polish electorate, by the Polish citizens.
Sir, Poland received, accepted. Polska przyjęła kilka milionów uchodźców z Ukrainy, co generuje wiele kosztów i problemów. Czy uważa pan, że asystencja Komisji Europejskiej dla Polski była wystarczająca?
Poland was sufficient for this situation.
Well, we remain ready to assist Polish cities, Polish citizens who've done that. I myself went to Wrocław and discussed it with the city, with the mayor and the city officials. We will try and do everything we can to make sure that there is money for the educational facilities, for the medical facilities, for the housing. So we are ready. We stand ready to help wherever we can. There is money available to do that. There are means to do that. But then, of course, we have to make sure the money also reaches the cities and the people who are actually doing the work. And that is, I think, something we need to discuss with the Polish authorities. We're at the disposal of the Polish authorities. My colleague Ferreira has been doing a lot of work in that aspect, and I remain at the disposal of everyone to try and improve this. Also, talking to the mayors of Warsaw, Wrocław, Gdańsk, and others who are doing a tremendous job. You know, I keep saying almost on a daily basis to my friends, Wrocław has about 1 million inhabitants and 220,000 Ukrainian refugees. Just imagine that would happen in our cities. Would we then also have civil peace like they have? Would we also have citizens doing all what Polish citizens are doing? So I think Poland can be extremely proud. The Polish citizens can be extremely proud of what they are doing and did. But they should also be able to count on the support from other Europeans and from the European Commission in making sure we help them face this challenge.
Yeah, this is true challenge because our population is increased by 10% almost in a couple of months. This is a real something, you know. No tak, ale w Polsce to jest bardzo widoczne na ulicach Warszawy i innych miast, nawet małych. Teraz bardzo by się przydał jakiś jasny, klarowny sygnał, jasna, klarowna pomoc ze strony Komisji Europejskiej, tak żeby Polacy zrozumieli, że mają ją ze sobą. This hot stage of war, maybe now it should be assessed, you know, in some formal way, this help and this support from European Commission.
I agree.
Maybe more visible way, don't you think so?
I agree. Yes.
Okay, sir. During the trip, podczas podróży po Europie przed Zamkiem Królewskim w Warszawie, prezydent Joe Biden powiedział, że to nie Rosja, ale Chiny są największym zagrożeniem dla światowej demokracji. Czy Unia Europejska podziela to zdanie? I czy Komisja robi coś, żeby przeciwstawić się ekspansji Chin? And is the Commission doing anything to counter China's expansion?
Well, you know, we, of course, the biggest threat to our security today is Russia. Let's be very clear. Russia has created a war on our continent. So that is very clear. That is our immediate and our biggest danger to our security today. But the issue of China is more a more systemic issue. They have a different system. Make sure that they can play a bigger role in the international sphere. We are economically strongly interlinked with them. And step by step, the European Commission has made clear that we do understand that we have a different system and that we don't always have the same interests. So we will be more and more clear in where we see the limits of what is possible. We need to make sure we don't create another dependency as we had with Russia and now on China. So we need to make sure we look very well at our supply chains, at our economic structures, so that we cooperate with China, but we don't become dependent on China. And that's going to be a huge challenge because some of our member states, some of the biggest member states, their economies are deeply intertwined with the Chinese economy. Now, I don't agree with those who say we need to slam the door on China. I don't think that would be a smart strategy. But we have to become realistic about the possibilities, but also about the limitations. And we have to become very clear about the difference we have in terms of our values and the fact that we will defend European values even if the Chinese don't agree.
Okay. Last questions, taking advantage of your kindness. How the man considered...
To pozwoli pan, ostatnie pytanie. Jak się czuje człowiek, którego umieszczono wśród setki najpotężniejszych ludzi świata i wśród 28 najpotężniejszych ludzi Europy?
Time magazine nominated you as one of 100 most powerful men of the world and one of the most powerful men of Europe by the Politico magazine.
Well, you know, when I think of my role, I think of my, I have two grandchildren now. I have a grandson called Case, I have a granddaughter called Marie. And when they are 30, either we will have succeeded and we will have been able to control the climate crisis, or we will have failed. And they, at 30-year-old, will know parts of the world that are no longer livable, will see wars over water and food. I think we have a mission. We have a mission to change the course of this planet away from a climate catastrophe. We can still do it. I'm thinking on a daily basis about when my grandchildren will be 30 years old, when we reach 2050, and hopefully then Europe will be strong, will be climate neutral, will have the most modern economy, the most just society. I hope that for my grandchildren. And that's what I'm thinking every day when I get up and go to work.
Sarah, thank you very much for your time, for your words. Zapuściłem brodę na pana cześć. Mam nadzieję, że pan to doceni.
That's incredible.
Let me say grazie di tutto. Chciałem pozdrowić pana z Rzymu, gdzie teraz się znajduję. Mieszkałem tutaj przez 30 lat i wróciłem właśnie po swoich śladach. On my footsteps right now. Thank you very much, really, for your time. And we cross fingers for Mario Draghi, which is now fighting for his survival today in Italian parliament.
Well, bardzo dziękuję. And hopefully see you in Rome. It's my favorite city. I grew up partly in Rome and my roots are there. So hopefully we can have a coffee someday somewhere in Rome.
Bardzo by mi było przyjemnie pójść z panem na kawę czy na jakieś jedzenie. Zaprowadzę pana do miejsc, w których się jada fantastycznie. Thank you very much, Terry, once again. Jeszcze raz bardzo panu dziękuję. Proszę przyjąć wyrazy wdzięczności za to, co pan robi dla Polski i dla Europy. Dziękuję bardzo.
Thank you very much. Thank you.